Welcome to Inside Running Podcast, episode number 4. Thanks for joining us again. My name is Brady Trelfall. I'm here with Julian Spence and Bradley Croker, and we're looking forward to spending the next hour with you talking about all things running. How are we, fellas?
All good here.
Good down in Ballarat. Good, Canberra. Canberra's good, Brad. You sound a bit better than last week.
Yeah, much better, and congratulations on your win last Thursday.
Oh, thank you, Brad. Really appreciate that comment first up. Still trying to come down from that high that was last Thursday night, but yeah, thanks very much. What's been happening, boys? Give me some details. What's happening in the life of Ballarat, Julian?
Oh, just some big, crazy weather down here this week. We've had torrential rain, hot days, humid. It's just been weird. It's been a hard to be a runner, actually, this week down here, which isn't unusual in Ballarat, actually, after this winter.
Yeah, you're whinging all winter now. He's whinging in the spring, Brad.
Yeah.
Oh, you should have rain come down.
Every episode. I don't think you've ever run in a – you've had a good day in Ballarat to run in for the last year.
That's why I'm that's exactly right. That's why I'm so tough. That's why we're all so tough, Danny. We just get it done. We're allowed to whinge about it, though.
Yeah. I'm hoping you're a bit more tame than you were last week. We had a bit of listener feedback of just how loose you were last week, so hopefully just pull things down a bit. I've already told you the download numbers were down on last week's show just because of your attitude the whole way through. So, yeah, looking forward to a bit more calmer conversation tonight.
Oh, yeah, well, I'll soften it up a bit for those pussies out there.
Very good. Brad, details to training week. You were sick this time last week. You recovered and you knocked out a good one.
Yeah, so the first part of the week was still a little bit rough. So I got out for 50 minutes on the Monday. Tuesday, I was umming and ahhing whether I should do a session because I still didn't feel great. But I guess it was old Brad. Wanted to get out and do something. So coach changed the session around a little bit. Ended up doing 5 by a kilometre with like a minute sort of jog slash float in between. And they sort of was running basically between sort of 307s and 312s for the K reps and floating a minute in around 350s. It was a hard session just based on how I felt. Still was coughing stuff up and had stuff coming down my nose. So in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have done it, but I did improve throughout the rest of the week, so I'd sort of dodged a bullet there. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday, I slept in, and so then went and did my 2 hours after work, which I sort of was regretting when work finished because it was, I think, 27 degrees here that day, and I thought 2 hours is going to be a bit tough, but got through it, averaging sort of 4:12s. So that was about 29K, I think. Thursday, just an easy hour. And then Friday, I had a session of 3 by 8 minutes with 2 minutes recovery. And I went to this nature reserve called Mount Rogers, and I haven't done a session there for 10 years. Back in the day when there was no Stromlo, that's where Dick Telford used to take all the AIS athletes out there for their sort of 2.5K reps. It's a tough loop. There's it's really lumpy, and the trail's not awesome underfoot, so it's really hard to get into a rhythm. And then it's also really popular with dog walkers. But because I haven't trained out there for 10 years, I thought, why not? I'll go out there. So it's 2.4K around, and ended up sort of running the 8 minute efforts between sort of 3:15s and 3:20K pace, and wasn't doing much in the 2 minute recovery. I was just taking it pretty easy. So it was a reasonably good session, but a tough session.
Got a couple of course records out there.
Yeah, well, that was sort of part. Well,
part of the reason why you went out there.
Yeah. So the story is, my coach held the Strava record out there up until maybe 6 months ago, and somebody broke it, and he wanted it back within the squad. So I went out there as a favour, and but I'm just glad Strava wasn't around when the guys of Sean Crichton and that were running out there, because I wouldn't have even been in the top 10.
Well, what do you mean when Stromlo wasn't around? Didn't Deke used to go out there and do big long runs out around Stromlo area?
Oh, yeah, sorry, I mean the cross-country course. because now they'll go and do 2.5K reps on the cross country course, where that never used to be there.
Okay.
Sorry, I should have clarified that. So then that afternoon got out for just 40 minutes, easy hour on Saturday, and then Sunday was a reasonably big session for me. So once a month, I'm trying to do some sort of marathon stuff just at the end of the long run. So I did an hour 45 at 4:04s through the bush, and then did a 5K in 16:18, and then just jogged another 3K at sort of 3:55. So I was really happy with how that went. Viv met me down for the 5K on the bike just to sort of clear the path, just because, you know, 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning, it was just, chaos down through there. So she did a really good job of, getting people out of the way and getting them to keep left. that was, best I've probably felt on a long run since I got injured. So it was encouraging. And, about 100 and just under 150K for the week.
Mm.
Yeah.
I like his fitness, Julian. He's coming along.
Yeah, he hasn't done anything silly yet. I'm waiting for it, though.
Big sessions, though, aren't they? Two-hour midweek longs, kick-down long runs. It's a long way to go.
The weather just sounds beautiful in Canberra. 27 degrees, God.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
We've had storms, but I've been able to sort of been able to go out when it's not raining. And yesterday morning was actually really nice. Mm. So,
got a question.
Everything's going well.
Brad, has your coach just recently signed up for Strava?
No, he's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Why?
Just noticing a lot of comments on your week this week, so I wasn't sure if he's just signed up to keep an eye on you or what it is.
Yeah, no. Well, actually, that one on Tuesday when he commented that I was controlled, I thought he was being sarcastic because it was still slightly quicker than what he wanted. And it looked controlled on paper, but I guess being a bit sick, it was probably harder than it was meant to be.
Mm. Very good. Very good week. Still in one piece. He's putting it together well.
Yeah. And yesterday was just in normal trainers too. So normally when I do that, I have some sort of quicker shoes on for the tempo section. So that was encouraging as well.
Mm. It's putting it together.
So have you put together a plan of what you want to do for, like, the marathon block or training? Like, are you going to break it up into phases, or are you going to...
So I've got my training set out till Christmas, which is, I guess, up until sort of 10 weeks out. And then I guess the marathon block will work out after I finish this next block. But over the next 2 weeks, it's actually a lot of strength stuff. So like this week I'm doing another sort of hour over the rolling hills, where I run the hills hard and just sort of cruise on the downs and the flats. Next week I've got like 5x1K hill reps, and I think 2x5K, and then a really hilly long run on that Sunday. So it's more about strength stuff over the next like 3 weeks, and then I'll do a park run on the 17th of December, and then that's pretty much where my training's up to at the moment. But the focus is on strength over the next few weeks.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
Were you going to send him like your email address, Julian, just to make sure it's all good?
No, I'm just interested in what's happening, where it's going.
Yeah, sort of. I guess it's different to, I guess the coach and I have discussed that, like, strength is probably my weakness when it comes to the marathon, not so much the speed. So we figure let's just try and get strong over the next, couple of months, because the speed's always going to be there. You don't need that much time to probably, pick up the speed. So plus at the moment he's giving me sessions that I haven't really done before, so I've got nothing to compare it to, which probably stops me from breaking myself. It's pretty low key at the moment, really, but fitness is coming along.
I like it. Rightio, Julian, talk us through your week.
Pretty uneventful. Tuesday, I met my mate Jared, who is doing a course down at Creswick Golf Course, staying at a beautiful resort down there to learn how to do fireman stuff or something. And we went and did a little bit of a 1 minute on, 1 minute off on the golf course. So that's always fun. I like running on golf course. It's always pretty hilly and soft underfoot, really hard to get a rhythm. Watch isn't important, so you basically just run hard for a minute, then jog for a minute, then run hard. So, it's good fun. Good to get it done. We went pretty early before he had to go to this course. And then Wednesday, just a couple of easy runs. Thursday, went to Melbourne, did a tempo on the track. Friday, what did I do Friday? Oh, it hurt my back. Had to take Friday off. Then Saturday, I tried to do it. Well, I was going to do a session, but I basically just ran up Mount Buninyong while the other boys did a session. And Sunday, got out for a couple of runs yesterday. Long run, pissed down rain, like late. It was interesting run. A lot of thunderstorms around, lightning and thunder. And it's just one of those runs that you get done. I've just been feeling a bit like it's been a bit of a drag this week, that's all. So it's getting there. Training's coming along, but there's nothing special. It's just grinding at the moment.
Comments there, Brad?
Where's your head at in regards to Steigen now?
Oh, yeah. Steigen, I reckon I called it about a month ago even and said, it's taking me a bit longer to get fitter than I thought it would, or than to transition back to this more intense type training. I think I lost more fitness than I had initially predicted I would after taking a bit of a break after the marathon. So Steigen, I hope to run well there still. Like, I've still got high hopes with I've still got another month of training and freshen up and basically knock off work on the 23rd for a week or so. So I feel like that's a good thing for me. It means I don't have to sort of stress about work and I can just go, hey, I'm going to go have a good hit out while I'm not having to wake up the next day, so I can focus more on the race. I reckon I'm still hopeful. I'm certainly not going to break 30 at Steigen. There's no way I could go out on that pace and have finish, basically. So I'll just adjust my expectations because a month, although it's a long time, you're not going to knock probably 40 seconds off where you realistically are at this point in time.
And so what's sort of the end? Do you feel a bit stale because there's nothing that's really floating your boat to train for?
No, I'm motivated. I'm just kind of sore when I run. It's just sore and stiff, and I've got no pop in my legs. I've had this weird, it's like a weird ITB in the hip thing. So when I try to generate power going uphill, I just got no drive from my hip, and it makes it hard to do workouts and feel good in them. It makes it hard to run over hills because every time I go up a hill, I can feel this little niggle. Even in the gym, I feel it. But then when I run on flat ground, and it's fine. So I'm just going through a patch where the body's not 100%. And it's probably because I've banged a bit of mileage out recently. I've gone to three sessions, done a few track races. It's just probably maybe 2 to 3 weeks before it absorbs and I get used to the training again, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. Fair comment.
Yeah. Will you address that though? Are you thinking time off or extra strength work or drop back to two sessions?
Well, I thought I've actually considered. Today was the first day where I thought, this is going on longer than I thought it would. I wonder if I should just drop back the mileage a little bit and start trying to feel better in all my runs, or whether I just persist with running more and see how I go in another week or 2 weeks, see if it comes good. Probably not sleeping enough, probably working, just not recovering enough. I reckon it comes down to recovery at the moment, and sleep's been a little poor. outside of work, like when I knock off work, I've got other work on, and then I've been driving a bit, and it just doesn't help. So, yeah, I reckon I've got to prioritise recovery a little more.
Mm. Too much on the Mercy's plate.
I'm no wise man, but I reckon the fact that you're not training for a marathon anytime soon, maybe you should just drop the mileage a bit. And because you've said that your focus is on the track over the next, you know, few months, so just dropping it back to 140k a week or whatever is probably not bad. You know, not a bad thing. You know, like I ran.
Coming
I
from ran Brad, my, this is good.
I ran my 10k PB off probably 130. You know, maybe it's worth having a go.
Yeah, I just don't know whether I'm brave enough to drop it back anymore. It's a bit of a I've always run well when I'm running more, and
yeah,
even over 10k I still feel like mileage is key, but it's like backing the pace off and trusting it. It's a hard thing to do, is to go out and run slow and trust that you'll actually get fitter because of it. Probably the same thing with dropping mileage. I would have trouble doing that, knowing that I'm not doing everything that I could. But yeah, it's an interesting thought.
Well, now you know how I feel running 440s.
Yeah. When did you run? I don't remember seeing you run 440s.
We would have had a couple of 440s that day before Berlin Marathon, I reckon, in the park.
Yeah, when someone else was with you.
Yeah, the first one. Yeah. Very good, very good. My week was pretty similar, a lot kind of based around Thursday night down in Melbourne. Pretty easy 12k on Monday morning. Did some 1k reps with Archie Reed. I spoke about him a couple of weeks ago when I tried to do a session with him, and I ended up stuffing up that quarter session, so it was good to catch up with him and actually do a session. And going back to my counselling session last week, actually giving someone else a bit of a control in the session. So we did 4x1k, led 500 metre each on the track, and just, yeah, it was good just sitting behind someone and not getting too fixated on the clock. And yeah, the plan was to come off the track feeling really good. So I think we ran the first one in 3:12 and then 3:05s and a couple of 3:03s. So really enjoyed training with somebody else, and it was a beautiful night on the track, no wind. And yeah, it was good kind of doing a session where you didn't absolutely smash yourself to gear up for Thursday. What did we do Wednesday? Just an easy 8K in the morning and then easy 6K in the afternoon. Then a bit of a shakeout on race day. I always like doing a bit of a 5K really slow jog on the morning if I'm racing at night. So I did that in Echuca. Drove to Melbourne for this B-grade state 5K. Had a bit of fun down there, taking on the great man, and yeah, it was a bit of fun. I just floated 12 laps and kicked the last 200 metres. That was our plan all night. So, yeah, good kind of training session. And then Friday, what did I do Friday? Went out for a jog. When I got home from work, it was a long day. I think by the time I got back to Echuca, it was about 2:30 a.m. And, yeah, just absolutely cooked and kind of jumped in bed and slept for a few hours, then off to work. So got out for an easy hour after work on the Friday. Saturday, did a 12K tempo, just at 160 beats per minute, which equated to 3:26s. It was nice and hot and humid, and I just kind of chilled out and just ticked it along. And then I went out Saturday afternoon for 8K and then skipped my Sunday long run, which is something I don't like doing and I'm not a fan of, but was just a bit exhausted. Had an engagement party in Bendigo and had a couple of beers and got home pretty late. And the plan was to do a afternoon Sunday long run with me mate Benny, and just was, yeah, really exhausted. And I just felt like I was probably operating at 2 or 3 out of 10. And I thought, if I go out and run 2 hours here, I'm going to cook myself and be really buggered for the week ahead. So messaged the coach and we threw a few messages back and forward and then decided that was the best thing to do. And yeah, probably that's something that the Brady of old wouldn't have done. I would have gone out and done that and buried myself, and then yeah, had to pull myself out of a hole for the next week. And probably similar stuff to what Julian's saying, just time in the car and doing a bit of stuff at work and just a bit too much on. And I just had to prioritise recovery yesterday and not get out for a long run. So my week was about 110K, I think, something like that. But yeah, I was happy with it. Kind of a good kind of speed week, some good speed sessions in there, and a good race back on the track, which was good fun.
I'd like to get your view on how the race played out on Thursday.
What about your review at first? You tell us what you thought watching the live stream, and then we'll take anything from there. I'd like to hear a third party before you get influenced by anyone else's comments.
Well, I thought initially no one really wanted to get after a time. It just seemed like that no one was running really quick from the gun. And then Julian obviously went to the front, which he sort of said that he wanted to do on the last podcast. And I guess you then sort of followed. But even then, like knowing that Julian wanted to run sort of 14:40, I was really surprised that you're running slower than 3 minute Ks through like the first 3K. And then I wasn't sure whether Julian said something to you, like, you know, stop sitting on me or, you know, do some work, because you obviously then went to the front and drove for quite a while. But then I guess about, when did you give up the lead, Brady? About a couple of K out, mile out, you sort of just then just tucked in?
Yeah, I led through 3K and that was 9:02. And then I think I might have led two laps after that. I think I led for about four in the end, but yeah. But I, keep talking.
And so that's all right. And then it seemed like once you sort of just blended back into the field that people were just sort of biding their time until the bell. And like your last lap was impressive, but I reckon you probably left a bit out there just by, you can only make up so much time in the last lap, and you made up a lot of time. So I reckon, if you guys were sort of 8:50 or so through three, you probably would have been able to hold it, I reckon. So that was my thought. I just don't think anybody ever went out hard enough to run quick.
Yeah, I think, like, we definitely could have run faster. When I went to the front, it was pretty much because I couldn't find a good spot in the pack. And I ended up being in lane, this is not the right spot, this isn't where I want to be. And I could run the same pace at the front and have a lot shorter route. So I thought, that's the reason that I went up there, not because the pace was too slow or anything.
Because the first 200 was good. The first 200 was 33, and I thought, beautiful, we're on here. Like, we're just going to bang out 70s for a while.
Oh, I didn't think that was going to happen, because the first 200's always fast.
Yeah.
It's been a while since you've been on the track, I reckon.
Yeah.
But when we went through 72, I think, the first lap, and I'm like, although it's – I know what the field was like, and I'd had a look through. There wasn't a ton of guys who were going to go faster than us. And then there weren't a ton of guys who would really take the pace either, I thought, when I was looking at the list. So I thought, might as well be me. I mean, I've been there, like, I've driven to Melbourne. It's been a long day already. I got stuck in the worst traffic. I was in the car for like 3 hours. And then I sat in the pack for the first couple of laps and thought, oh, this is a waste of time. Like, I might as well get something out of it by being here rather than sitting in the pack jogging for bloody seven laps and then trying to kick down. So I got to the front, and I actually really wanted to make it quicker, but I just felt like crap. So I was literally like, that was what I was running, because I couldn't go any faster for that distance. So I didn't have it on the day to go faster, and I did step out and sort of encourage Bray. I didn't actually know who was behind me at the time, but I stepped out and let the person behind me go through, and it was Braidney. I thought, oh, good. And he obviously put his foot down for a few laps. And then
did you see me step out as well? Because I was like, come on,
yeah,
someone else can have a go.
And I was behind you. Yeah, and I thought, nah, I've got nothing. Like, I was struggling to hang on to you. So you can step out. I don't mind being in front, but it ain't going to be faster than what you were going. And I actually enjoyed that little bit of a rest patch or a slowdown patch. So, yeah, it wasn't impressive.
Brady, why did, like, so you obviously had heaps left in the tank in the last lap. So why did you step out rather than try and drive home the last 2K?
The home kind of kick actually surprised me. I didn't realise I had that much left, and I felt like I was putting in the same amount of effort, and the Ks or the laps were just starting to slow a bit. I think, you know, they might have been 70s, 71, 72s, and then I started running a couple of 73s, and I'm like, I don't want to be the guy out here just towing it and working really hard to run 72s, towing everyone around. So that's why I stepped out. And then when no one came, I got a bit annoyed. I'm like, there's about 20 people in this heat and no one else wants to lead, and I've just led four laps or whatever. So I just said to myself, I'm just going to win this race, and slowed it down a bit, and waited for a few people to come around. And I think I was just running off more anger and kind of banged up a bit of that motivation, and thought, I reckon I'm just going to back myself with this finishing kick here. So it didn't feel, the pace didn't feel great, you know, but in saying that, when they took the lead, you know, when you're sitting on someone and it's going 72s and it feels so much easier than just trying to drive out 72s yourself, that's what it felt like. And it felt like when I did let the lead get taken over, it actually felt like I was almost going too slow then. So that's when I knew that I'd kick it home. And I said last week, like, I would have been happy with, you know, 14:59, and it was a bit of a kind of dress rehearsal for me, for Steichen kind of thing, just to get on the track and feel the bends and get in a pair of spikes. And at that stage, I knew that I reckon I could close in a 69 or 70, and I thought, that's all right, I'll run my 14:59 and I should be a chance to win it. So that's how it kind of panned out. And then, when Julian went with about 600 to go, I kind of just, made sure I covered that move and stayed with him. And it was almost a perfect way to transition into a big kick down, because we went from running 72s to, I think, a 68. And then it was just on in that last 300. So you kind of felt like the legs were ready to kick it up again. But, I only felt like I had probably one move in me. Like, I'm not sure. I did think, I'm like, do I just try and grind out three big laps here and just, you know, go 69, 67, 65 or something? But, I just didn't feel like I had that kind of finishing kick in me.
Yeah. You both get a lot from it, and it was good for the podcast, getting out there, and because you boys were quite prominent, so that was good.
Yeah, some of the comments were pretty funny, reading some of the people tuning in at home. It was good. That was good, good, good. But yeah, I'm taking a lot of confidence from that, because I think if we're in the A heat and we, things just like sitting in a pack going through it, you know, 8:45 or 8:50, maybe, hopefully we would have got some good cover and could have then still, you know, finished quite strong and maybe ran a 14:40.
Yeah.
The way I was feeling, that was pretty much the perfect race anyway. Like, I didn't have much more in me, so that worked perfectly for me.
Mm. Were you concerned with your finish, Julian? I was just talking to a few people today, like that last 50, like you looked like you were really battling and people were about to really come over the top of you.
In the warm up, I've got a bad back. I've got a bad back in general.
I was surprised you raced. Like, after we were warmed up together, I thought when you went back into the stadium earlier, I didn't expect to see you again for the night.
Yeah. Well, I found some Voltaren and ibuprofen, basically took a whole bunch of that, and hoping the adrenaline would sort of kick in. And it did. During the run, I didn't feel pain. But what happens is it really, basically something goes wrong in the joints in my back and my I've had scans and everything, and it comes up with like the standard back pain things like joint degeneration and a bulged disc. And they don't know what actually causes the pain, but what happens is all the muscles around spasm. So the lower lower back muscles, they spasm, and all my glutes spasm as well. And to break that spasm takes about 3 days for everything to release. And it's very hard to drive power when your muscles are in spasm, because they're locked up. And it affects my range. And so when you're trying to go fast, you just have no range for your hips. And not like this is an excuse, because aerobically I was struggling out there at that time. But in order to drive and to really gain power or a powerful stride, my glutes and lower back wouldn't let me. So that probably had something to do with it. Also, I'd put in a pretty big kick myself from like 500 to 200, I guess. And so my kick was a lot longer than yours and sillier, but I knew that was my chance to actually win the race. So I went earlier, and it would that's why I would have been looking a little bit more haggard at the end than some of the other guys who kicked from 200 out.
Mm. Yeah, it was a good move. It was a gutsy move and going at, 500, 600 to go.
Takes more guts. It wasn't gutsy. Not really. I don't think so. It was just what I did.
If we said to you this time last week, though, that you're going to close that last lap in 63 seconds and get out kicked, we would have been laughing. Like, we're saying you didn't finish that strong and you still closed in 63. It's still a pretty good effort.
Yeah, I mean, I knew you would have something there because I knew how good you looked with five laps to go. And I could tell that you were well within yourself, whereas I was a little bit on edge on my limit, and it's very easy to tell the difference. So I knew you were coming. I thought from that at that point you were going to win the race easily. I was pretty certain of that happening, and it was just about sort of what I could do to get as close to you as I could. So when you went past it, maybe 300 to go, I thought, okay, here it is. Let's see how long I can hold on for. Let's try to get myself away from the guys behind me, because I know they'll be coming the last 100. So I'll try to put as much distance as I can now.
No, it's good. It's good fun. We were pretty hyped up afterwards. Like, good to be racing and bodies around us and kind of, I'd probably went into it and probably going off our conversation from last week, Brad, kind of not really worrying too much about the times in the end. And even it was just good to have a race and try to win a race rather than worrying about the times.
Yeah.
Mm. And even afterwards, I was like, yeah, still not that caught up. People were asking, what do you reckon you would have ran if you're in the A raid and stuff like that. But they were just two completely different races. Like that A race, which we'll get onto now, those boys went for it early. Like I was talking to Bryce Anderson beforehand, and he pretty much said he's come down from Canberra to run and wants to run a fast time. And he didn't spend kind of $400 to fly down and back on doing a sit and kick kind of race. So him and Deej and Gabriel Celesi had a bit of a plan to take the pace out fast. And they went for it, but it maybe just slowed. Julian, you were warming down together at the time. You'd be able to comment on it as well. But it just seemed like they were trying to go fast, and they went fast early, and then it kind of just started to slow back, and they just seemed to be trying just as hard as they were at the start, but the pace just wasn't ticking through.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I kind of looked at it as they went around every now and then, and I thought, oh, these boys are working hard. But then you looked up at the clock, and I thought, oh, it's probably slower than the year that I did. I had a good one there 1 year, and there was a really good pack, but I came probably 10th that year and ran the same time as the guys coming 4th and 5th were coming. So they look a lot faster than what they were actually rolling through at. That's what I thought anyway, when I actually looked up at the clock and thought, hey, these guys are actually, this pack here is going to run 14:20 rather than 14:05 like I thought they were going to run.
Yeah.
I didn't have a watch on it or anything.
Nah, but Andrew Buchanan, all class, like, let him go a bit early. They had a bit of a gap on him at one stage there, Bryce and Dejan, and then just pulled him in and then just absolutely dominated everyone in the last probably 800 metres. I'm not sure exactly when he went to the front. I'd have to rewatch the video, but...
Oh, he started going at 800. Like, yeah. He had a good gap on at 800. He really destroyed them.
Just dominant. The class of the field. Max Stevens is only 4 seconds behind from South Australia, but it was a big 4 seconds. Like, no one was getting close to Andy. Bryce Anderson finished third in 14:14. So that rounded out the place getters. But my man, Jared Clifford, 14:22.
Good run.
Do you know how old he is? He's only like 18.
Yeah, no, we were discussing that on our run tonight. Very good run.
7 seconds off the World Junior Qualifier. And this is the Paralympian. So pretty amazing stuff. And I think he may be 2 seconds off for the 1500 with his 3:47. So watch this space. This guy, every time he gets on the track, he absolutely smashes it.
Yeah, he's fit, that's for sure.
He's fast as well. He knows, yeah, he can mix it. That was pretty good racing there, but you're right. 14:20 would have got you fifth. Would have got third spot Victorian. So there's two interstaters in between there. Which brings me to the next, so it was Andy Buchanan was the first Victorian, and then it must have been Haftu Strintos, the young kid from Glen Huntley, remember? Oh, yeah. Born in 1999. Tell you what, he's real young, 14-15. Matthew Clark, 14-20 for the third Victorian. So not much depth there. And it brings me to this article. I'm not sure if you guys read it by Len Johnson on Runner's Tribe, his weekend column, kind of wondering where all the Australian representatives were for the state 5K leading into Zatopek in 3 weeks' time. You boys read it?
I read it. Yeah.
Mm. Comments, thoughts?
I don't know. We're going to have Liam Adams on a bit later. We'll have to ask him about it because I guess he's one of the, I guess, big guns, I suppose.
True.
He
was in the stadium.
I don't know. I just don't think there's a lot of incentive in running amateur athletic events, really. You know, like, I don't know, winning a state title, what does it mean? What does it get you when you can go and run a fun run and pick up overseas airfares or $1,000? I know which one I'd prefer. I can, you know, you can't use a state medal to buy food.
You can't. You reckon it's lost a bit of the prestige?
I reckon a little bit, yeah.
Julian, comments? Worked for your mate Monner all those years ago? That's what the article
said. Well, apparently,
I
didn't realise that he would do those races. That was an interesting read, actually. I was thinking, like, oh, that's romantic, like, that everyone would do these races on the lead into Zatopek in a perfect world. I think there was a lot more. I think what you find is once a few start showing up, more start showing up because they know there'll be a good race on, there'll be a chance to get good times. But what will happen now is they'll look and say, oh, 14:07, winning time. It's not worth me travelling back from Falls Creek for that, or it's not worth me flying down from Sydney for that, or wasting airfares, whatever, to run 14:07 by myself or 14 minutes by myself. So although, like, Andy's run was amazing, he killed him, this isn't like this. They're not going to get qualifiers from this race. There's only 100 people in the stands. It was pretty average weather. Like, there was rain squalls throughout the night. So I reckon if you found like 6 or 7 real contenders show up 1 year, you're going to get a lot more attention on that race the next year, and it will just flow on. As soon as they stop showing up, the race will stop getting attended. By the real big guys. And there's probably not as much discussion between groups. Like, you might have one training, like Team Tempo had a couple of guys there from South Australia, but then there weren't a lot of, like, the MTC guys weren't there, the guys that are actually capable of putting on a real fine show. Canberra guys weren't there, really. So they're the guys that make these races. There's not a lot of guys who can run 13:30 out there. There's a few in Victoria, like Liam, but you almost need like a collective effort to make it.
Mm. Yep, I like it. Females' race was pretty good to watch as well. Melissa Duncan first, 16:19. Sinead Diver second in 16:22, and Virginia Maloney third in 16:25. So three Victorians there, but I think Len did say in that article, no 5K or 10K Australian representatives in that field either. Melissa Duncan, obviously, for the 1500, and Sinead for the marathon, and Virginia maybe for the marathon going forward. But, same kind of situation there. Melissa kind of went early. I'm not sure if you watched this one on the live stream, Brad. She kind of went early and gapped everyone, and then Sinead just closed the gap, wouldn't kind of go away, and that 3 second gap was probably only in the last 250 metres when Melissa Duncan put the foot down, and you'd back her over 250 metres over a marathon at any day of the week, I think. And yeah, it was. I thought Diver's run was pretty respectful.
So my live stream cut out with like 600 metres to go, so I didn't actually get to see the last part of that race. But I was impressed with Diver's run, like for a marathoner, and she's over 40, isn't she?
Didn't she run a marathon like a month ago or something though as well? Julian, do you know?
Yeah, she was in Japan. Yeah, Japan. I know she ran with one of them. Yeah, 3 weeks. But I'm not exactly sure. Yeah.
So
her run was good.
Impressive run.
Yeah.
But then again, Melissa Duncan won the race and she outkicked her and she was the winner. So, but that's closer to her event, I guess. But she's only just come back, like we said in the other podcast. So it was a good race. I just liked watching the race. That was, to me, that was a highlight of the night, watching those two battle.
I reckon Lissy Duncan will be running about a minute quicker by the end of the season over 5K.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
You've heard it here first. Another Brad Croker prediction. Yeah. Hey, Brad.
Well, I think I made the comment that if there's something going wrong if you're running fast in November, Brady.
Yeah, this is on another message, private message. You said, I'm doing a Brad Croker and peaking too early.
Could be the case. Yeah.
I've done hardly any training. I'm just strung like 2 weeks together.
Well, I'm going to take that as a compliment because at some point Julian thought I was in good shape then.
Yeah, you're in rebel
well,
shape.
Everyone thought you were in good shape.
Yeah, I don't think I'm peaking too early. Just got a bit of old school speed back about me. Before I step, I was happy with that. It was good. I was happy with that last lap. And, that made me date. I've never won a race there at Lakeside before. You guys?
No, I've only run like 3 times, I think.
No, never won a race there.
So that was good. Just running scared that last 100. I was just waiting for Julian to pass me. Just cacking myself.
Well, I was talking to someone on the long run yesterday. And they may have mentioned this was, they said, oh, all this talk about the AV 5K. I don't remember there being a podcast called Road to AV 5K. It was all about the Road to Berlin. I think that was someone might have mentioned that.
Yeah, no, I've been mentioning that as well. Like people are coming up and congratulating me and they're like, yeah, you got him back. And I'm like, no, Berlin Marathon AVB race at the 5K does not equate. I'm not claiming this one. This is just a bit of a tick over.
Oh, well, yeah, I think I'll give you 37 of those races or however many times you've beaten me in a row for the Berlin race. I'll take that one every day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, all right. We'll see how that goes going forward. We'll be off in there. Hey, give me some news on Japan. We got a B qualifier, Harry Summers.
You did. Third on the list in Australia now. I believe that's right. I think that's right.
Yeah.
Third on the list, yeah. So Harry Summers, he runs in Sydney still, does he?
No, runs in Melbourne.
Is he in Melbourne now?
Yeah, he's with Dion and those Mentone boys. Dijon.
So he lives in Melbourne?
I think so. I've seen a lot of photos of him popping up on Strava with those guys.
Oh, okay. Well, I always thought he was from Sydney. But yeah, he ran in some crazy race called the Hachioji Long Distance Meet. And they had tons of heats. I think it was a university type race, but there were also some of their team events there as well. Like, you know how they have in Japan, they have the teams sponsored by like big corporations and one team's from Toyota and the other's from Fujitsu and Honda and Yakult. So the race was very fast. It was won in 27:32. And Harry, what did Harry run? He ran 28:23, was it? I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah, 28:23 point something.
Yeah. So that puts him third, which gives him a B qualifier. So I'm guessing that he's going to be very competitive at Zatopek because that 10K at Zatopek will be basically form the trials, if I'm reading that correctly. The winner, if you win Zatopek and have a B qualifier, you'll go into the Com Games.
Yeah, that's good.
So that'll be a good race to watch.
We got any news on who else is running Zatopek? We should try to do a podcast. I was talking to Tim Crosby about it the other day, I reckon. Try to do a podcast down there, get some interviews and stuff.
Oh, yeah? I don't know. I don't know for sure, but I know that the Steigen event is going to be very solid. There's a 5K there, and everyone's going for the 5,000 meter qualifier, and it's set up to be very fast.
Are you meant to be saying this stuff now? Is this public knowledge? We got the exclusive?
Yeah. No, it's all good. I'm pretty sure it's all, like, basically, yeah, it's all good. I looked at the entry list today, I'm pretty sure. So it's a high performance race that basically the MTC crew are coming down to, and they're all going to help each other run around and try to get that 13:22 qualifier. And it probably go as fast as they can because there's a very solid list sitting at the top. Top four are fast, 13:19 to 13:13. So they'll probably try to chuck another couple of names in there.
Very good. They won't hang around for a couple of 72-second laps afterwards?
I think they're running after us, actually.
That's right. Yeah, that Japanese race, 92 guys broke 29 minutes.
Yeah.
92.
That's depressing. Very depressing.
It is, isn't it? Hey, Brad, your new story for the week, the Central Coast Half Marathon. Never heard of it before this year.
Yeah, so it's on obviously this time every year, and it's up sort of between Sydney and Newcastle, and it's not very often that you get a deep field in these sort of events because it's like $500 up for the win, but it was really a who's who of New South Wales sort of road running. Dave Crinitti continued his fine form from Berlin, winning the race in 67:53, and then Matt Cox, who's obviously not long after running sub-220 at Melbourne, he was second in 69:03. Then you got Russell Chin at 70:33. Vlad Chatrov, who's another 218 marathon man, 72:38. And Jack Colreevy in fifth place in 73:27. So to get the calibre of all those athletes together at sort of a local fun run was pretty impressive. And I guess by the looks of it, sort of Vlad and Jack might have been more out for a sort of solid training run as opposed to a race. But, 67:53 on that course in the heat's a pretty good run, I think, from Dave. So, yeah, it's and Steph Austin won the women's in 82:54. She's a South Coast or New South Wales South Coast girl. I think she's from down around Maroombula way. So, yeah, so it was good depth in that race.
Is that a hard course?
No, I think it's flat. It's pretty much out and back. So, okay. Yeah.
Have they pumped the publicity or something? Why are they getting these big names there? I know Robbo was down there working it. He was doing the commentary.
I'm not sure. I know Vlad and Jack live around there. So for them, it's like, well, it's, you know, they don't really have to travel too far for it. And I guess guys like Dave and Matt Cox and Chinny, they just like to race a lot. They're the type of guys that will race a half on the Sunday and they'll clock 30K the next day sort of thing. So, they just race a lot.
Dave's doing some pretty solid stuff. You guys follow him on Strava?
I don't think he owns a car. I think he's running. Like, he just, uses running as a way to commute by the looks of it.
He's doing some big Ks, some real big Ks.
Yeah.
He's down for Steigen as well, Julian.
Yeah, I had a look through the entries today, actually. It's going to be a good race.
You got to call someone out 3 weeks out?
What do you mean, win, to win?
Nah, just call someone out that you'll take down on the night. You got the Steve Dineen prediction right?
Oh, who am I going to take down? Steigen.
Call someone out.
Maybe not yet. Maybe I've got to look at the list to do this.
Okay. Good smart move.
Yeah, I'll rather look at the list, but I will. That's not too bad.
Have you got someone to call out for Moose on the Loose this week?
Oh, not in particular. Just recent long run just sort of sparked a bit of debate within the group about more running etiquette, I guess, but more from a group-style situation. So have you guys ever been on a long run when someone just wants to sit a few metres in front and decide we're not going fast enough, we need to go a bit quicker? Does that happen often to you guys?
I'm probably a bit guilty of that at times.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, true, I'm probably asking the wrong blokes here. But
no, what? I don't have a run with anyone. All the guys I run with, I just chill out with. I got dropped today on my afternoon run. All these blokes running 4:10 pace for an easy run.
Yeah, well, yeah, this guys. Same with us. We do our group runs quite slow. I think today we average like 4:40 or something for our loop. But on the long run, generally, if you're rocking up to a group for the first time, you don't go and run in front of the pack and decide these guys aren't going fast enough, especially when your group contains a guy who's run sub 13:10 for a 5K, 2:07 for a marathon, and 2:07. Well, what's mono run? 2:08:15, 2:07, 2:08, yeah, 2:08. Deep run 2:07, yeah, and a few other good runners. So the fella from Melbourne, Mitch, he came down to help me with the market that we had stall set up at a market, and I said, I'll come out for a long run. And Mitch thought, oh, cool, this is great. And obviously fancies himself a bit of a downhill runner. So every time we got to a downhill, he would take off. But he didn't know where we were going. So none of the other boys really got sucked into chasing the pace and just had him waiting at every single turn-off spot. But the general rule is, and it's been a rule everywhere I've been, is if it's your first time running with a group, you sit either behind the pack or you sit in the middle of the pack and you run and you follow along and cooperate. You don't go, hey, this is a bit slow, I'm going to start pushing this. You blokes aren't doing enough work. And it's just, it doesn't really annoy me as such. It's just a little bit odd to see. But there were some blokes that it would really piss off, I reckon. And I was talking with Mona tonight, he was on the bike. He said if anyone did that to him, he'd let it go for about the first half of the run until they were well out in the bush. And then all of a sudden, Mona would move to the front and start to put the hammer down on the way home. And these blokes would get left out there by themselves in the middle of the bush, not knowing fully how to get back home. And that would teach them not to do that ever again. So not an emotional rant. I think it's just more discussing what not to do when you rock up to a group for the first time. And look, I love Mitch, a good fella, came and helped me out down at Stall, but it was very interesting to see someone do that. I haven't seen that for a long time. Normally, most people, when they're around the caliber of runners in that group, just normally sit to the back and just watch what happens and jog along. So it was pretty bold, actually, by him.
So how is the pecking order decided, though? So is it like, so Mon is there, Mon is choosing it, the pace, or Collis, or then those two aren't there, do you get the reins, or how is that decided?
Collis, basically. Collis will decide the pace because he's the alpha for sure. Mon is on a bike, so he'll just go and do his own thing for a bit, does a bit of downhill, does a few jumps, wheelies.
Tail whips.
No, it's
has his generally hat on.
Yeah, Collis will, if he feels good, he'll go. He can keep up with anyone, so if someone else is feeling good, they might go. But this isn't guys on their first run out there. These are guys who've been going for ages. Sometimes if I feel good, I'll go, and most of the time though, it's just a really nice group atmosphere, and occasionally later in the run it might get going depending on who's feeling good, but certainly not at the start of the run.
Very good. Hey, that wasn't a bad rant. I think that was a bit more toned down, but I think it was valid. It was a good one. we'll move on to the listener question. And I'm thinking, should we bring Liam in for this listener question? Because I think we're going to talk about drug testing, and it could be a good question for him as well.
Yeah, I certainly have. Yeah,
I reckon that could be a really good point, because he's probably got a bit more idea of this stuff than we do. Give me 2 seconds. We'll add him in. So this question comes in from Nick, and it says, I'd be interested to know what your experiences or lack of experience is with drug testing at the races you guys attend. Have you ever been drug tested or know of anyone who has? What's the process like? When do you receive the results, and how and from who? Bradley Croker, kick us off.
All right. Well, I don't have a lot of experience in this area because I'm not good enough to be tested. But my drug testing story is when I was working at Swimming Australia, I was team manager for the Youth Olympic Festival a few years back. And I guess most of the athletes are about 16, 17 years old. And as an introduction into elite competition, ASADA turn up and just pick athletes at random to test. And because I was team manager, I had to be their chaperone, I guess because they were underage. So I had to go in the room with them. And so I got to see how it was all done, which basically, I'll let Liam explain the process because he's obviously had it done before. So it was quite interesting though, because yeah, 16-year-old kids, first time, they were just shitting themselves. So it was pretty rough on them. And I reckon everybody that gets tested for the first time is probably pretty nervous about it. So that's, yeah, that's my experience with it.
Julian, what do you got?
I've never been tested, mate. The races I do, can't afford that shit.
Bogon to Hotham could be a dirty record, yeah. Is that what you're telling me?
Well, yeah, it could be. I mean, if I could actually afford, you know how much that shit is? It's expensive.
Well, you're the one that looks it up. Remember that website you kept talking about on the road to Berlin?
Yeah, I know how much it was going to cost. It was going to cost me like a month wage just for one round of it.
Yeah, right. I've been drug tested once before at that stall when I won the mile at stall one year. I was whoever wins the mile gets drug tested. So pretty pretty dodgy. Like this guy from ASADA followed me around until I needed to go to the toilet and then ducked into like a little room under the grandstand at stall there and dacks down to your knees and shirt off. And yeah, he just pretty much watches you urinate in one of these little cups and then he does a bit of testing to make sure there's not a, like, I don't know, imbalance. There must have to be so much, I don't know, chemical reaction or whatever it is. And then, yeah, they only pay the prize money once the drug test comes back clean. So never actually officially get a letter saying your drug test has come back clean, but got a check for a couple of $1,000 from the Stall Athletics Association, which was good. So that's my only experience, but I felt pretty bad because they shouldn't have been testing me because I won the mile off about, I think it was about 75 metres that year, so I had a pretty good handicap. But Jeff Risley, I took him down by about 1 second and he caught the whole field, ran wide, ran a 4:01 mile, and I was the guy getting drug tested, pretty much running a 3:58, 1500, I think. So, yeah, probably testing the wrong guy. But Liam, tell us all about your experiences.
Okay, I've been tested quite a few times and of recent probably only twice this year. With competition testing, I'd been tested as a junior and it was quite nerve-wracking going in there, and you'd have to have a team manager come with you because you just don't know exactly what you're supposed to do, and they just make sure everything's above board and make sure you do the right things and stuff like that. So but when you get into senior ranks, with some of the bigger races, yeah, you do get some drug testing, and I've been tested at world championships and stuff like that. And that would happen regularly, but just recently at world championships, I've noticed that there's been a bit less testing, and I kind of had a go at Seb Coe this year at the World Cross Country Championships in Uganda, saying that not one single athlete in our team had been drug tested. And after I'd done that, I got back to the rooms, and then one of the team members said that they'd been drug tested. So I was a bit embarrassed about that. But with the drug testing, of recent, I haven't had many in competition testing, but I've had a lot of out-of-competition testing. So ASADA would rock up at my house, say right now, say 9 o'clock at night, just get home from training, just grab some dinner, get a knock on the door, and ASADA knocks on the door and says, are you Liam Adams? And then you go, yes. And then the timer starts, basically. So they ask you if you've trained within the last 2 hours, and if you had, you've basically got to wait with them for them to be able to take your blood, just for their for the bio passport, everything has to be within a threshold. So they want everything to be normal standards. So you don't have high elevated standards just because you just finished a session and stuff like that. So, they do blood tests and then also urine tests. So you've got to pull your pants down, right down past your knees, your shirt up to your nipples, and you have someone staring directly at you whilst you're taking a pee, and it is a very weird feeling. But yeah, it is very strange. It's quite uncomfortable, but I guess you have to do it for the sport, for clean sport and stuff like that, and you just hope that the competitors that you compete against are subjected to the same type of things. I definitely know that it happens regularly, drug testing in Australia, but there's a lot of other countries where you don't get drug testing at all. And I've heard rumours of a certain country which is pretty good at sprinting only having one out-of-competition test leading into the London Olympics for a whole athletic team, which is bizarre. That's coming from their national doping body only doing one out-of-competition test, and I don't understand how countries can get away with that.
I read that as well, actually. They were going to almost lose their wider credibility over that.
Oh, well,
something.
They always say that they're going to lose it, but they never do it.
Yeah.
The sports never put the pressure on teams to meet a certain criteria and be WADA compliant. And then you get things like, I think last year at the Olympics, Kenya was supposed to have a quota of out-of-competition tests, and they allowed them to have their in-competition tests leading into Rio, so just before their events, to be counted as out of competition testing. And that was an absolute joke over in Rio. I'm guessing you guys heard the story of a Kenyan coach trying to take a sample or a test for one of the athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach got sent home, but the athlete was fine to still compete. And then, our experience, it was just unprofessional. Michael Shelley was called to do some testing, and the guy introduced himself at the door, and Shelley wasn't there at the time. He was out having lunch, and the guy came, said, "Hi, is Michael Shelley there?" And it's doping control. They're not supposed to say who they're looking for. They're supposed to ask for your accreditation just to make sure that you're not the person they're looking for. And they announced who they're looking for. And yeah, it was a joke because you could duck away and do whatever in that period of time. So
yeah, this is at the highest level. It's pretty scary to think about. You've watched that doco, haven't you, Brad? You told me to watch that Icarus doco.
Icarus.
Far out. That scares you. And then hearing this stuff from Liam's pretty scary as well.
Yeah, the lengths that the Russians went to is just unbelievable. Like having a secret room, and then moving the samples overnight and things like that. So
they were cracking the bottles open, just fully swapping them.
Yeah, well, I guess that's another thing, with the listener, with the question, what's the process? So I guess once you pee into the beaker, ASADA then have this testing kit where there's two bottles, and they basically get you to look at the bottles to make sure that, they're the same and they haven't been tampered, and you basically then pour half into one, half into the other, and then there's this, special top which sort of cracks the glass so that the top can't be taken. It can only be removed by a special device. I guess that's to stop people from then, the testers taking it away and taking the top off and adding something to it. So I guess that's a bit more about the process.
Mm. The old AIS boy is coming through.
I know, it's just me being involved at the Youth Olympics.
Dropping all these things. Hey, Liam, we've got first question for you. We just came off discussing the state 5K champs and how there was no Australian representatives in the 5 or 10K in the actual fields. And we were just talking about, did you read Glenn Johnson's column that he wrote for Runners Tribe about how there was kind of no big dogs in the field? And we thought, having a big dog like you on, just wondering why you didn't run it.
I did read a little bit of the article during my lunch break. But, yeah, I saw what he said, and, yeah, it was interesting that there was none of the big names, but I don't really think that many of them have been rocking up to the state 5K that much just of recently, so over the last few years. So it's not like this year. It was completely strange, and in all fairness, like, Andy Buchanan's been having a great year and well deserved that win. And I know he's already gone sub 14 over in America, and I think if the pace was on a little bit earlier on in that race, he would have done sub 14 easy. He looks pretty good on Thursday night, but the reason why I didn't do the event was because I've pulled the pin on running Zatopek and just getting a bit of training under the belt and just slowly building up at the moment. So I was considering doing the 5K at States, but I just was nowhere near the condition I would have liked to have been for that race. And, yeah, just the fact that I wasn't doing Zatopek, I just didn't see the reason in doing the 5K the other night.
Yeah, it's risky, isn't it, putting on a pair of spikes and going up against some of those younger speedster kind of guys, especially coming back from a marathon and preparing for a marathon at the same time.
Yeah, I just thought that, well, I have been doing a little bit of speed work in that at the moment, and I think I've probably had a bit better speed whilst in marathon prep than I have been at the moment. So, yeah, things haven't been going great. Big hours with work. Been battling probably... It's been probably the worst hay fever season I've ever noticed. So it's been a real big issue for me. But, yeah, I just haven't done the training that I wanted to do leading into any of these races, and just thought I'll just get the just tick off the training and look at some races early January and try and get in some good shape for then instead.
Because last time we spoke, like, the bounce back from Berlin was pretty impressive with that Melbourne half marathon and City to Sea the other week, but I'm kind of getting a bit of a hint in your voice now that things haven't progressed from there.
Well, yeah, it was... I bounced back pretty quickly, and the weeks after that, I just probably wasn't training as well as I would have liked to, and I guess I bounced back well, probably for the fact that I was kind of concerned that I'd be needing to run another marathon coming the end of the qualification period, and I was keeping an eye out on guys like Chris Hamer. I thought he was in some pretty good shape and that he was capable of scalping my time and forcing me to run Fukuoka and trying to tag Collis on the last day. And fortunate enough for me, I'm still ranked second, so I think my position in the team's a bit more secure, so I can kind of relax a bit more now. And I think the shifting in my focus has probably affected the way that I was preparing for the next month or so. So,
Do you know when they announce the teams?
I think it's probably about mid-December.
All right.
Okay. So, yeah, just probably a little bit. I think Fukuoka is the last day of the qualification period, and they'll announce it probably within a week, unless they've got some other issues with selection or appeals or whatever else, which it could take longer.
Do you know any guys that could be a threat running Fukuoka? Any Australians?
Well, obviously Collis would be a massive threat, and I'm not sure how his training's going at the moment.
I don't think he's not going to run.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing. I don't know if that's confirmed. Have you guys heard anything about that? Or
Julian's the man.
Julian's the man, okay.
He ain't running.
Okay, yeah.
Can you say that on this podcast?
I imagine I can. I mean, he's on Strava. He's on Strava. He tells people he's training. He's not hiding anything, I don't think.
Yep.
To me, it's pretty obvious even if you didn't talk to him, you could just look and see what his training is and go, he ain't run the marathon in 2 weeks.
Okay.
That's
good news for Liam by the sound of things.
Yeah.
Who else?
I've got one question.
What's that? Who else could possibly go around? Well, Harry Summers, he won't run Fukuoka.
He's doing Zatopek.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, he's doing Zatopek? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think so.
He got himself that 10K qualifier the other night, so I don't think he's got any marathon on his cards at the moment.
I guess he'll be looking to secure, third spot on the team probably for that.
Yeah, so I guess at Zatopek he'll just be covering his bases and making sure that he gets that third spot. So it'll be interesting to see how Zatopek's ran, because I'm not sure exactly who's running at the moment. And I don't know if it's going to be a quick race or not. I guess it depends on who rocks up and what type of form they're in. But it's always weather pending at Albert Park, so who knows?
True that. Brad, you got a couple of questions for Lamp?
Yeah. So assuming you do get selected mid-December, what sort of races would you pick out early next year in the lead-up to Comm Games, do you think?
I think a few road races I'd be looking at. Possibly Cadbury Half Marathon, just to get a half marathon under the belt and start the season off well just after some altitude training, and then run the bridge 10K in Tasmania, and then possibly a couple of track races maybe just to get some competitiveness back and stuff like that, and just try and push through. Like, even though I won't have the leg speed as the other guys would, just get out there and race and just try and push through. Just get in that hurt that I haven't done for a while in those shorter distances. So I think that could be quite useful in a marathon program. So I'll have to look into that as well. I'm not sure exactly what races. Maybe a 5K track race might be on the cards as well.
Do you train on the track every week?
Yeah, I have been. Well, a lot at the moment. But I guess I do a fair few track sessions too. A lot on the roads, just thresholds and that on paths and gravel and whatever else. But I still do a lot on track, just for the fact that GPS isn't always that accurate, and some of my key sessions I just like to know exactly how I'm going. So I guess the fact that a track is exactly 400 meters, you know that your times are what they are, and you know exactly how you're going. So
plus I guess if you do want to do track races, you know, it's probably a good thing to actually be on the track train, just because of the way your car and everything. So if you're training, keeping in touch on the track, then it's easy to jump into a track race.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Liam, last question. If you're going to gear up towards Gold Coast Comm Games, get selected mid-December, time off work, or are you just going to motor through?
That's an interesting one. I haven't heard much details on if there's like a pre-departure camp, and then if I'm forced to go into the village 2 weeks before my race and stuff like that. So if that's the case, then that's probably going to limit the amount of time I can take off work. So I think I'll probably get at least a week or two off work for training and that. And I guess hopefully I'm not required to go into camp so early. So hopefully I can go up, maybe do another little stint of altitude training, or go up and do some heat acclimatization and stuff like that. So I'm thinking I can get a few weeks off work and do something like that, yeah.
Yeah, right. And leave the listeners with one big monster session you got coming up over the next 2 weeks before we talk to you again. Scare some people.
No, I actually don't think I've got many. I don't think I've got any monster sessions at all. They're really short and sharp stuff. So I actually haven't looked forward into this next program. I'll have a quick look for you right now. Let's see. Quarters, 5x1600 with a 400 at the end. 4x9 minute threshold was one of my sessions. 6x1200s with a 400 and 2x200s. And yeah, that's probably the largest sessions I've got in the next 2 weeks. Just the fact that my program still says Zatopek on it. So I think it's more geared towards running Zatopek. But the fact that I'm not running Zatopek anymore, I think I'm probably going to add a bit of volume onto some of my sessions here. So I'll sit down with my coach tomorrow night and see what we're going to do with the program over the next few weeks, yeah.
Beautiful, mate. Well, thanks for your time. And we're looking forward to following your journey the next 2 or 3 months, and kind of giving the listeners a bit of an insight into what it takes to be one of Australia's top 3 marathon runners and work towards the Commonwealth Games, hopefully.
Yep. Yeah. Cheers.
Beautiful. And that wraps up the show for this week. Julian, what's on for this week?
This week? No plans this week. Just working. I got a conference in Melbourne Thursday, Friday, where we see all the new shoes for next year, 2018, second half. So that's cool. Get to see any new innovations. Anything fun, I'll try to sneak a photo of, show you. I won't really be able to talk about too much. Sometimes you can. I'll just ask them what I can talk about. So nothing special, really. That's the answer to that.
Get us an interview down there next week.
With who?
I don't know. Some big dog be hooking around, won't they? Shoe innovators?
No, mate. No. It's half of our reps don't run. They wouldn't know how the shoes feel. They're salesmen.
Right.
It's not as cool as it sounds, mate.
Businessmen.
There's a couple that do. You got bloke like Purdy, Simon Hurt. He works for New Balance. He knows. He's always good. He gets excited about shoes. Then there's some that just sell them to you.
Beautiful. Brad Croker, what are you doing for the week?
Not much, just wrapping up school reports, a couple of low-key sessions, and I think maybe like 33K on Sunday. So, yeah, nothing special this week.
No, that's good. How good are school reports, Brad? I'm loving writing them at the moment.
Yeah, I've only got like 6 to go, so be pretty happy come this time tomorrow.
You'll be right. Righto, fellas, that's a wrap for another show. Thanks for joining us again on Inside Running Podcast. If you've got 2 seconds, you could jump over to the iTunes store and leave us a review. That would be greatly appreciated. Share it on social media. Do all those things to help spread the word. And we'll be back next week with some more running news. Thanks again. Born to the river, the black blood in my veins. I found out when I was just a child that your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Oh, no. Yeah.
where I stand, a man whose roots he understands, and I'm gonna hold my head up high. I was told as a young man, doesn't matter if you're white or black, just show love to everyone you meet, doesn't matter if it don't come back. On the sugar of my skin, to the
catch you out, think your skin can bring you so much pain. Now I hear you say, you got the best of both ways. Won't you come and take a walk in my shoes and tell me if you take my place? Oh, no. Doesn't matter if it's